When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's Jared Waitley. Thanks for listening to the podcast. In this episode, your snap judgments from round 6 of the AFL, the Monday Means Test with David King, the wisdom and experience of Robert Craddock, plus John Hawkes joined Wayne to remember the great Lonro. You can get in touch at any time. Waitley@sen.com.au. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. Good morning. What a round that was. Ripper footy, statements made from beginning to end, from the Bulldogs all the way through to the Hawks. Fierce weeks met with ferocious responses. Amends were made and credentials sharpened. Take your pick between Collingwood and Carlton as to who was the most impressive winner in a round that might light the way. Blazing controversies that lasted the weekend and will continue into the early part of the week, and teams that wilted rather alarmingly. It's rife for snap judgments. Get them in now. 1-300-736-736 is the Alltel open line. Alltel, the better business telco. And the 40 Wings Temper Tech, 0433-981116. Temper, a mattress like no other. What you feel most intensely on a Monday morning, that might find its level as the days go by. For the first time this season, the ladder is a valid reference point. All have played 6. Geelong is the last team standing at 6-0. It's the 5th time in Chris Scott's tenure they've held that mantle, and it's their best start since 7-0 at the start of 2013. At 5-1 at Sydney, the Giants and Carlton. The Blues are the battle-hardened unit we came to love in last year's final series. Remember when we would sit here on Monday mornings those years ago and lament Carlton's inability to absorb adversity? The first sign of injury would bring them undone. It seemed like the eternal wait for 22 champions to be out on the fields. Now Michael Voss has built a system and his group has built resilience through those years of pain. Halfway through the third quarter when the Blues fell 20 points behind, it felt like they had reached the end of the plank. Rather than concede, the Blues raged, and it was led by the uncompromising Patrick Cripps and Sam Walsh. It was converted by Charlie Curnow and Harry Mackay, and it was felt right across the competition. Battle-hardened, ruthless and uncompromising, no longer hostage to the absentees. Carlton have learned their painful lessons well. They're ready. When Carlton heartbreakingly missed the finals in 2022, Michael Voss was clear not to get distracted by the minuscule deficit in percentage. The focus was finding the 4 additional wins to make them a top 4 team. Last year, after the giddy September run, Voss was equally clear that they'd added only 1.5 of the necessary 4 wins, and they'd have to find the rest in the run to 16. Well, the Blues are 5-1. And the terms of engagement couldn't be clearer.
A really pleasing performance because, you know, in the second quarter, we were well and truly up against it. And I think what sort of shows your, I guess, growth as a team is when you can sort of absorb that, acknowledge that it's happened, but then be able to lock in and tie back the score by a couple of goals late in that quarter, which just gives you a bit of a look at it. So that was actually a really important part, not just the second half.
The terms of engagement for Carlton are clear. Port Adelaide, Melbourne and Essendon are the next group at 4-2. The Power don't beat the best teams. Essendon have a couple of wins you can believe in, I reckon. Anzac Day shapes so well. In the quartet at 3-3 are the Bulldogs, Fremantle, Collingwood and Gold Coast. If you believed everything that was said last week, the Dogs were riven with internal strife. The chief executive and the coach were blueing. The players were off the coach. It was time to rebuild. The captain was considering his future. The coach was halfway out the door and the supporter base was in a state of revolt. As catastrophizing goes, this went nuclear. And all there is to do is win. And the Bulldogs did so emphatically. They had a good week internally and externally. The coach and the administration did what they needed to publicly, but more importantly, privately. And the players got to work. They were led by Bailey Dale and Jack McRae, who roared back to form. And the open question is around the art of coaching. Did that present because of the way that Luke Beveridge had been handling them? Or did that present because they stopped mucking around with the way that they had been handled? And you can frame that either way to suit your own argument. But they're well in the season at 3-3, and a more viable proposition than you might have believed if you'd listened to everything that was said last week. And Collingwood, well, they actually began the premiership defence on Saturday. What an interesting game that was. The Magpies were jumpy and skittish in the face of Port's initial onslaught. Down by 5 goals quickly, and there were concerns everywhere. You could see them. But the challenge roused the champs. That's what happens with the best. They were roused by it. They asserted their own pressure and their own game. High octane, high intensity, high skill, high lights everywhere. The Collingwood we came to love last season emerged through the second and third quarters. The freedom and joy returned, and with it, the threat. And I'd say it's no coincidence that it happened after the bye. It was an awkward opening phase of the fixture that they knew would come with a breather. The Magpies stuttered through it before the physical conditioning and the mental sharpness came to hand.
There's little things, referring pressure was something we were doing early, and then we just started to take, a bit more territory by hand and foot. And I think our forwards were starved of opportunity a bit, early, but they looked dangerous. I think we scored nearly every second time we went inside 50 early, so we just needed to get a bit more volume there. So our mids got busy. We got a pretty simple formula, really. Let's just get the ball going and then turn up and have fun doing it. And there was some energy built through that. You could just see it just coming. And this group's done it for a while now, knows when we're starting to get our game going. I think we look way more connected today than what we have in previous weeks.
They got their game going, and it was unmistakable to see the premiership defence is now officially underway. And the trio at 2-4, that includes the Brisbane Lions and West Coast. So call it the curse of Shamar Joseph. The Gabba has been breached repeatedly since the West Indies downed Australia in January. And having not lost at home last year, the Lions have not won in 2024. And West Coast have gone from unwatchable, right on the cusp of going back to the banned list, to appointment viewing, thanks to Harley Reid. He is appointment TV like you rarely see. One player has altered the fortunes of a footy club in a way we expect in the NBA and usually think can't happen in the AFL. For sheer theatre, Ross Glendening should have marched out and given Reid the Derby medal. It's not like he hasn't done it before. West Coast, it was 3 weeks ago, we were giving them priority picks, and now they're watchable again. Their appointment TV with Harley Reid. If misery loves company, the Saints and the Kangas fans can comfort each other today. I've been dealing with this for the last hour. A North Melbourne supporter and a Saints supporter walk into an office. I'd recommend going to the coffee machine at that point, given my first-hand experience. The King's Gambit is going to be a beauty. I can promise you that as we get to it with David King. Your snap judgments. I have sympathy for Toby Green. Not because of the nonsense around the Toby tax or that he's been singled out. I just keep watching the incident and asking, how could he get out of that without getting suspended? The confluence of events almost is inescapable. How could he have got out of that moment without getting suspended? I hope the Giants take it to the tribunal tomorrow night to at least test their luck, come up with a good case and go and argue it thoroughly. Everyone has done their job correctly so far. This has to have been graded by the MRO and it belongs at the tribunal. But I do think he's just in an inescapable position. I'll debate that with David King when the time comes. And I still have sympathy for the umpire on Friday night. I'm not nearly as hardline as most. I'm not sure you're blowing the whistle very often in that scenario. Snap judgments are for snap fitness. Snap fitness for the feeling. What are you feeling most intently this Monday morning? Nando's in Epping to get us underway. Make it a good one, Nando.
There you go. You're happy Carlton supporter today. Anything on fine. Like, the boys played amazing. Bossy's got the plan together. That physical game that they played, like, high tackling, high pressure, is it going to sustain? Like, they're going to get tired for the whole season, yeah? Playing that. Like, is that going to sustain through the whole season, you reckon?
Oh, I think so. That's their brand. And they haven't done that every week up until Saturday. As Kingy's last words on crunch time were, it's time to see Carlton's violence and damage back in the middle. Oh, and did they bring it?
They did. They definitely did. And I couldn't be happier, mate. Like, you know, I've been a 10-year member and seen some hard times. But, mate, on the weekend, it was amazing being in that crowd. In the cheese squad, it was amazing. It went off. Yeah, it really went off, mate.
You could feel it. You could feel it shaking through the TV, I reckon, Nando. Being in those Carlton crowds, that's just good times. Good on you. George is in Oakley with the Blues in mind as well. Hello to you, George.
Morning, Jared. How are you, mate?
I'm well.
Thanks, buddy. Just want a bit of a snap judgment / preemptive strike here. Out of 9:30, if you and David King don't have the Blues as premiership favourites after that performance on the weekend, with the amount of outs that we had, I'll spew up worse than Terry Wallace did all those years ago.
So we do our seedings. I think Carlton had been top of my seedings for 5 of the 6 weeks. I marked them down on the Adelaide loss. I'm marking them back up. George, I'm marking them back up. I don't think you'll be disappointed. Darren's in Doreen. Hello, Darren.
Hey, Jared. What would the WWE do? They would have the champ nearly out up the second quarter. Then the Pies come back as they usually do. And we're back, baby. We're back.
And
look out, everyone. Yep. We're back.
And then they would put them in the biggest game of the regular season immediately afterwards. Is the AFL's the WWE all over here? How blessed are we that Anzac Day is next, given what's happening?
That's it, mate. That's it. That should be a really good game. Looking forward to it. It should be a great game.
Good on you, Darren. Thank you. Jacob's in Chirnside Park. Jacob, what's your snap judgment?
Yeah, good day, Jared. Just a quick takeaway. It seems like Groundhog Day, another Monday, and we're still talking about umpiring decisions. I just wonder, in this day and age when we've never had more field umpires, if it's time that we dropped the requirement that our umpires be elite endurance athletes. There are phenomenal umpires at lower levels, and the only reason they haven't progressed is because of their beep test capabilities. And I just wonder if, when we've got 4 field umpires out there, if we can scrap that and just have the best decision makers out there.
We need the absolute elite and best decision makers in the game because at the key moments it becomes a test of nerve as well as judgment, doesn't it, Jacob? Thank you for your contribution. Elijah's in Fitzroy. Welcome, Elijah.
How you going, boys?
Ripper, go.
I just want to speak about Will Hoskin-Elliott's game on the weekend. I thought he was the game changer, and he can pretty much play anywhere. Wherever Craig McRae plays him, I feel like he can play a good role. He's pretty important. I feel like he goes a bit underrated.
His high marking, his willingness to be in the right place at the right time, his tireless running, it was all there, and it materially changed Collingwood's fortunes. He was ground zero of that turn, Elijah, and he's going to get full tote odds for that. If he's been underestimated, I reckon these few days there's going to be a swell of those to point out his importance over time. Good on you, Elijah. Gary's in Lara. What do you got, Gary?
Yeah, good morning, Jared. What another cracking editorial you've done for us. There's a reason we love you. But I want to get to, there's been a pile on Rochelle for the Crows for what he did. And why don't we just be different? Let's not pile on him. He's made mistakes. But let this be a turning point for the young lad. Let's support him. Let's not decimate him. Who hasn't made a mistake in their time? Well, okay, he did, but let's not finish him off. Let's see what he can do for us over the next few weeks.
Thanks, Jared.
Good on you, Gary. Thank you. The compassionate side of things. Very modern thinking there, because that's what will go on inside the club. Daniel's in Pascavale. Welcome, Daniel.
Morning, Jared. I think all I can say is demolition Durham in the midfield.
Very good.
What Sam Durham is doing for our midfield is outstanding, and it really is, I guess, if you dare say it, sticking up towards the edge mentality. He's been fantastic, and he's keeping Darcy Parrish out. Jai Caldwell's playing his role really well, and it's something that we probably haven't had, is that accountability for the midfield. That was evident against Port Adelaide, and ever since then, we've gone to work, and credit to Brad and the coaches. They've got the ball moving in the right direction, and sets up a great game for Thursday. It's probably going to be one of the better ones we've seen in a while.
Demolition Durham. I like that, Daniel. He's exactly the player that Essendon needed and haven't had for a long time. Brendan's in Glen Huntly. Welcome to you, Brendan.
Hey, Jared. How are you, mate?
I'm well.
Hey, I think the only ones that care about premiership favourites are bookies and these nonsense Carlton supporters this early into the season.
Very nice.
But the other one is, everyone loves, like Rochelle, they like paying into him when they're losing, but they love the theatre of the players and to be themselves when they're winning. But do you think if the Carlton players hadn't have jumped on Draper at the last minute and just left him laying on the ball, do you reckon the umpires would have had to pay holding the ball?
Someone has to,
let him go.
Someone has to lay a legal tackle. So Tex goes in and does that. There was time enough to go, okay, everyone's appealing for it here. What is it? The umpire said no. The laws and the replays say yes. I feel I'm a bit of a softie this morning. I have a level of sympathy for the umpire. I have a level of sympathy for Toby Green in the way that these things have landed. Snap judgments. For Snap Fitness, Snap Fitness has you covered. Visit your local Snap Fitness to find out more. Snapfitness.com.au. There's a long queue today. Andrew, Andy, James, Richard, Andrew, Sam, you'll fire yours through next. It's an emotion-charged Monday after a ripper weekend of footy. Andy's in Altona. Welcome to you, Andy.
Good morning, Jared. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
All I could say at the moment is Ron Joseph must be weeping in heaven this morning after watching what's happened to the North Melbourne Football Club. I personally want to call on a group of heroes to step forward and put together an alternative board ticket to cease the stranglehold that the Peter Scanlon acolytes have over the North Melbourne Football Club. There is a con job being played on the supporters. Sonia Hood sat on the panel that appointed David Noble and wanted to retain him when Clarkson's name was first mentioned. So she is not without fault here, even though it's become basically verboten to ever criticise her. This needs to end. We need football people back at North Melbourne to get us back to where we belong.
These are glum times, Andy. Thank you for your snap judgment. Steve had texted through, Ruse fan, and I'm officially out. No more pain. And on the other side of it from yesterday was Louise. Relief after waiting 252 days to see and be there for another Hawthorn win. Happy to be back on the winners list. And hopefully we can build from there and get players like Day, Lewis, Bruce, Wingard back over the next few weeks. Go Hawks. Andrew's in Nidri. Welcome, Andrew.
Oh, good morning, Jared. Look, the North Melbourne support beforehand, I just think just hold his head up, because a couple of weeks ago, us Essendon supporters were tearing the Tullamarine Marine down after the performance of Port Adelaide. So don't give up yet. There's always hope. And I think North Melbourne not that bad. Just a bit of an experience cost them yesterday. But in relation to Essendon, selection dilemmas. They've got the umpire should be given a life membership at Essendon because Walker should be actually brought to the tribunal for abusive language after the siren towards the umpire. It was not a good look. He should be fined. He abused the umpire on the way out. That's not professional. And nobody commented on it, but it was very poor form. And it could have been a 50-50. He actually kneed Draper in the back incorrectly, and it basically didn't tackle him properly, and that was let go as well. So that's my snap judgment. And look out, Collingwood, we're after you this week.
Good stuff, Andrew. Well done. James in Maribyrnong, what's your snap judgment, James?
Yeah, g'day, Jared. I just wanted to talk about the importance of Thursday's game, not about the ladder or the teams, but just for the love of football itself. My seven-year-old has just started under eights, and I'm taking him to his first Anzac Day match. And he's super, I'm as excited as he is. And it's just about the love of football. His mother's a diehard Pie and I'm a diehard Bomber. So there's a bit of a quiet household in the lead up. But we are just super excited. And I just wanted to say for all the footy people out there, like in North supporters and everything else, days like that will just help you love the game again. So yeah, go Bombers. And I hope he has a great day.
Good on you, James. There's plenty will. The biggest home and away fixture of the year on Thursday. And it is stacked. Richard is in North Caulfield. Fire away, Richard.
Oh, hello, Jared. Happy Monday. As a very happy Collingwood supporter, all I can say is I'm looking forward to this Thursday, but it's an entree compared to what's coming the next Friday night.
Right.
Carlton versus Collingwood, the greatest show on earth.
Oh, with a recent set of games that are burnt fiercely into the mind. Richard's lovely. What times we have at the MCG coming. So Wednesday night has become this haunting, treasured fixture that Melbourne and Richmond have built. Anzac Day, which we well know. Carlton and Geelong in the twilight on Saturday. And then, as you rightly point out, Carlton and Collingwood thereafter. Andrew's in Seaholm. Hello to you, Andrew.
Hi, how are you, Jared?
I'm well.
Question. Having a look what Toby Green did the other day, what difference is that to 2 metre Peter from Essendon?
Yep. So
to Same, but different.
Same, but different. So I'll debate this with David King as we go. I think there's... So Peter Wright pleaded guilty. I hope Toby Green takes the chance to see where the boundaries are here, but we'll explore that in the means test. I'll get to the specifics of that as we go. And Sam's in Calcalo will be our last snap judgment for the moment. Hello to you, Sam.
Hey, Jared. How are you, mate?
I'm well.
It's a pleasure listening to you guys every day. Love the show. I'm a Richmond supporter, but I just want to put my hat off for the guy, Bobby Hill from Collingwood. Very, very unselfish. Always handballing off, and he made 10 goals for us. It was amazing. What do you think?
It was an incredible display of teamsmanship from a small forward. So if I was the coach of a couple of players, and I know Josh Fischelli's right at the front of the conversation, I would clip up what Bobby Hill does, and I would send it to some of my small forwards. I always remember when Craig McRae was in with Andy and Gazy, and he spoke about they're not your goals, they're our goals, and we celebrate them together. And the player who couldn't quite grasp that is not there anymore. And Bobby Hill's the absolute personification of it. They're our goals, and it doesn't actually matter who kicks them. Maybe that's the luxury of having a Norm Smith in your back pocket, but it was absolutely striking, Sam, and so admirable and commendable. And that's what teamsmanship looks like. Snap judgments. Gets us underway. The means test is coming. Here's Nathan in the newsroom. Let's make sense of the events of round six and where we find ourselves as the ladder makes sense for the first time in 2024. We've lined up the Jamieson whiskey today. David King for the Monday means test. Hello, Kingy.
Is the black barrel the strongest? Which one do we need this morning? The triple distilled?
Little shot in with the latte.
Oh, what a weekend. Look, footy's great, isn't it? Yes. We were just talking about the weekend and the unknown going in, and if you got more than 4 out of 9 for your tips or 8, you've done really well. Just so hard to read the game, which is terrific, which is great. It's exactly what we want. We want an even competition that bounces around a little bit without too many answers at round six.
Okay, so the King's Gambit for Victoria Police, made for more search police careers. We're going deep on the emotional side here.
Well, not both ways, you know, positive and negative. How much should our football team's performance affect us? Like, how much should it take over your mental state and your small world? We're all in our little bubbles.
This is the ultimate PhD topic for
me. Oh, man. Like watching the game. So in game, there's a whole suite of emotions you go through. You know, you bounce around, mainly scoreboard related. And then post game, you've got to rationalise what's just gone on and why you feel so flat if your team's lost again. And then your text messages start going off and your Twitter goes crazy and all those sorts of things, and people are ringing for their own little therapy sessions on the side.
Yes.
And then you wake up the next day and it affects your whole week. It does affect the outlook of your week. And it's in the end, it's just, I keep coming back to, as a fan of any club, it doesn't matter which club you're supporting, all you want to do is be proud of your football club. Be proud of how they play and who they are and what they're doing. But, gee, there's times where we just feel responsible for them. Yeah, it's a bit, people around here, the constant conversation, oh, what's going on with your mob? Yeah, they're going, geez, they've been awful for 5 years now. You know, you feel like you got to have an answer.
Yep.
I don't know what's going on. Oh, so look, the Kangaroos supporters, the West Coast supporters have been there. They're coming out of it. The Essendon supporters have been there for a while. They're coming out of it. Carlton supporters were there for a decade. They're coming out of it. Fremantle are bouncing in and out of it. It's just hard, isn't it? It's just a strange form. That's when I think when you see Carlton come out and do what they're doing now, you think, well, those supporters have been through hell for a decade. You forget that side of the absolute enjoyment of what they're going through. Collingwood supporters, to win the flag, they've never been really down. They've been up for a long time. But maybe Richmond way back when.
Definitely.
St Kilda supporters, Ross and I, we're just giving each other a cuddle this morning on the way.
Yep.
So it's just, he's not a very good cuddler either. it's amazing, isn't it? I don't know what the answer is, but we all feel a little bit of responsibility for our own club.
It's what makes the game so powerful for us, I think, in our community, in our states. It's why we enroll in it. So let's do a little bit of the purging of the soul on the North Melbourne front.
It doesn't
front,
help
shall we?
When the text messages are coming through. How are those cats going, King? Well, that sort of stuff doesn't help.
The needling.
Yes.
All right, so let's do the North Melbourne side of things while we're here in the group therapy. So here's Alistair Clarkson after the loss, heavy loss yesterday.
We've got a fair bit of work to do. You know, but as I said on Friday, know what the narrative's going to be, you know. But knew that 18 months ago, 2 years ago, when we took on the job, we needed to change the culture and environment of our footy club and invest in youth. It's the only way that we can go, you know. And that's what we've done. We don't back away from that. So we know where we're at. I think it's accurate in terms of the sides that we're playing over the next little while. We've got more of a similar age sort of profile of what we have. Today suggests that we've still got a hell of a lot of work to do with the way that we want to play the footy. I said on all three facets of the game, whether they had it, we had it, or the ball was in dispute, I thought they were the stronger side in all three of those facets. And if you can't win those three, you're not winning games of footy. We've got some work to do, but I don't think it's any surprise to us. I don't think it's any surprise to the football competition.
So where are you with North right now?
Yeah, I understand what Alistair's saying, but that's been the same conversation for so long. And the bottom line is that Alistair come as a big money, high-priced acquisition to fix this. And it's second year now, and we need to start seeing something that makes us proud. Because I'll be honest, it's a long way from making us proud yesterday against a team that should be like for like. You know, they should be in that game. It was a smashing. And you look at it and you say, okay, well, what do we really take away from that game? What are you get in the car and talk to the family about or your mates about? What are the positives that you should be gripping, attaching yourself to or gripping onto? And I don't know. I don't know. And I'm watching it as close as anyone. And the Kangaroos fans have had enough. They have. And it's probably unfair to come so quickly to this point with Alistair and with the club. But, this has just been rolling on and rolling on for too long now. And we don't want to hear that anymore. I don't want to hear that Hawthorn were better with the ball. Hawthorn were better without the ball. Hawthorn were better. Why? Well, it's not a talent issue. There's enough talent at the Kangaroos to match it with Hawthorn. I can wear it with the others. But again, they give up another big score and look like there's absolutely no understanding of what to do when the opposition have the ball. You know, we could show vision after vision after vision, and it's not always the young guys. So if it is the older guy, stop playing them. Stop playing them. Make a statement as a club. Say, you know what, we've been going with you and going with you, and you're not the answer anymore. You're not actually helping us. And I don't care how young you have to go. To get the reward of selection has to come at a minimum standard. You have to be able to – you have to put up 7 out of 10 application – or 10 out of 10 application for a 7 out of 10 performance every week. If you can't deliver on that, well, you know what? You go back to the reserves. And I don't care who's playing reserves. Kangaroo fans are sort of sick of the meandering. And I'm always quick to defend them because it's a tough place to be when you're rock bottom. But I watch the West Coast, and it's nothing to do with the kid. They're all going 100 miles an hour. And even when they were getting beaten the last few weeks, we're still saying, hey, you can see their contest work improving. You can see this getting better. I just think this is too quickly to say, oh, well, he knows the answers. He's got the answers. I don't know. I don't see it. You need evidence, don't you, at some point? Do you agree with that or not?
Yep. The search for some evidence is they needed to be more competitive yesterday. That's absolutely true.
So what? Yeah, you and I used to critique David Noble, looking for the minimal gains, the marginal gains, he called it.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, winning quarters, winning this, winning that. Well, apply the same measure this year. That's a second preseason, but two preseasons now to work on this defensive. If it's going to take 4 years to work out the defensive system, well, maybe you're not the man. I don't know. But we can only go on what we see, and I see what Ross Lyon's done defensively with St Kilda. You can love it or hate it, right? But they are far more competitive than what the Kangas are right now defensively.
Yep. All right, so you've posed a deep philosophical question, and you are getting philosophical answers.
You're mocking me too.
No, so David from Newport has gone, "The defeated live on," from a poem by Peter Porter. Works for me. Good on you, David.
I'll write that down.
"With the decline of organised religion in society, people's football teams have taken its place. A bad loss is like being told you're going straight to hell." That's Ryan from Caulfield. "David, my 17-year-old son comes home from a good junior footy win and watches North. He told me he was trying not to care, but woke up this morning and told his dad, he's depressed. It also doesn't help his sister chose to follow Carlton." M from Elwood.
It's hard to get the kids on board the Kings at the moment, I tell you.
"The King's Gambit for Victoria Police, looking for a career that gives you more. Search Police Careers, Victoria Police made for more." I'm throwing our categories out of whack today because I'm starting with PFI, Preliminary Final Integrity.
Really?
When you left me on crunch time on Saturday, you said to me, "It's time for Carlton to re-establish their violence in the midfield, their damage." And I watched from halfway through the third quarter and I could see it visibly through the screen.
Oh.
PFI for Carlton.
How good was it? I mean, the Carlton fans, that was a great game. I really enjoyed the game. So there's times where you have to talk positively about the Giants, but to the arm wrestle that was going on in game was brilliant. I love the strategy and then the application. So the strategy at centre bounds to make that 4v4 battle four one-on-ones. They pulled back. So the teams now are looking for back position to force their opposition under the footy, and then you own all the space on the outside. And Carlton got that all day. All day. So Green would walk back a metre backwards, Cripps would go behind him. They go another metre backwards. They were getting like 10, 12 metres from the actual drop zone of the footy. And then it was just helter-skelter from there. And that's where Walsh – that's why the damage was so high, because when you won the ball, you were in a whip of space. And Cripps burst forward many times. Walsh is dynamite in there. It's a spot for dances. That's a dance floor in there. It's a spot for dances. And if you can move like him, then away you go. The actual return from clearances – and it was the only way they were getting inside 50s at the start was from centre-bounce clearances – so they scored 6 goals, 5 from centre bounce clearances, which I think was their second best result for 10 years. But that's a massive number. You know, you consider what some teams are scoring at the moment to get 40 points out of centre bounce. Was awesome, and to do it to a high quality opposition like that was just amazing. So I look at Carlton and I say, okay, you've got so many stars out of your team at the moment. Like you really shouldn't be able to do that against the GWS. So Saad, McGovern, Chera, Martin, Motlop, Fogarty, and Cunningham. So all of those guys are first pick, you know, 23 players, aren't they? So their violence is back. Their ball movement is now the strongest part of their game. They didn't have that last year. So when you looked at last year they were number one for clearance, you know, plus 10 points, and number 11 for turnovers. So now they're top two for turnovers and they're 11th for clearance. So it's flipped on its head. So to see the clearance game come back like it did with such vigour and anger and violence, if they can get that clearance game back to top three, top four, which will happen because that's just them, right? And that's the coach. Then it's complete. They're the real deal, Carlton. And I know we talk a lot about Carlton, but when they play like this, it's hard not to. And we sort of talked about. I'll talk about the club. I think when you get to these levels, Jared, the gaps are so small. It's not really about how you're playing, or it's always about performance. But it becomes a buy-in discussion. And it becomes a look. They look at each other. Hey, need more from you. You don't have to say anything. The look of a captain staring down a young player. Hey, come on, let's get going here, or let's move on. Get on with the next bit of play. Everything just becomes a look. And I think they're at that stage. Michael Voss has done an amazing job, and the stability of this football club for the first time in a long time is allowing them these small wins. The way Walsh has returned, back from, they're talking a lot about the rehab department, losing players and all that sort of stuff, but what they've done with Walsh has been unbelievable. He's had 70 touches of the footy in 2 weeks. So I'm excited about Carlton. And I know you were a couple of weeks ago as well, and we got a little bit wobbly after they lost one, but you're allowed to assess along the way. What's missing? What else do we need to see?
They now have the system and the pieces to execute that. So I was thinking, while I was watching that game, you're thinking back over the – so we've been doing this for 7 years now. Those years of Carlton when they were just hostage to injury. Oh, they're missing this player and this player. But they didn't have a system built to be able to absorb any – absentee whatsoever. That it was like the eternal wait for 22 stars to be on the field. We just don't have it. Now they've built a system like the best teams do, and you plug in parts. They have quality where they need quality. They have resilience to absorb what goes wrong. They 20 points down halfway through the third quarter, they are at the edge of the plank at that stage, and it sparked them. That's the look in the eye, and it goes around. And they their best players go to work, but everyone's in on it.
Yeah.
So Durden and Cottrell,
they're all there.
Yep.
And the message comes through on the text machine here, and you've got to not look at it at times, but it's not a one-game reaction. What we're talking about is evolving in season, right? So they made a drastic change of going from to one ruckman to two ruckman. So that's a big shift. Yeah. So that's got to pay dividends. And
it's not working for the other teams who are doing it.
So it's a massive concession that you need to lose a position of running support. So they go to pit net in the last 2 weeks, and their clearance game's just gone boom. Now Paddy Cripps apparently has said something to coach along the lines of, "Hey, what about we have a look at Mark again? Because I think the young fella's going really well, but he needs a bit of help, and we need him fresh when he comes in the ruck." And so they're the sort of things that we have to assess on the run. So of course it's a week to week discussion. So they've found answers in motion, and are getting the wins along the way.
Yeah, they have preliminary final integrity in abundance, Carlton, and they will feature prominently in the seedings.
Which is disappointing because I really don't want them to be good, Jared. Look, it's when you're down the bottom like Ross and I are, we don't want these other teams to be good.
We don't want anyone to be any good.
This is the season off.
The Monday Means Test, thanks to Jameson Irish Whiskey, triple distilled, twice as smooth, one of a kind. Gather round. Just a little glitch, but we're back with you now. I quite like this, Kingy. My week is determined by how Kingy and Jared rate the Blues on a Monday. We'll have a pep in my step this week. Listening to Kingy squirm as he gives Carlton PFI has been the highlight of my morning so far. Go Blues. That's from George.
Starting to wish they did purchase the Kangaroos, Jude.
All right. The big issue. So the Brisbane Lions, it's the Shamar Joseph curse, I reckon. Since the West Indies beat Australia, the Gabba's getting invaded and raided on a regular basis. The Lions are 0-3 at home. They're 4-2, so they set a few things right with the win over Melbourne. 2-4. torrential rain, I always think, compromises that game. But the big issue, so where are the runners up as we have a ladder that makes sense for the first time and they're in 12th?
Well, do you have to finish top four to win it, Jared?
Rule of thumb, yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, that's on a knife's edge now, isn't it? Because they've lost three at home. So last year they're 11 from 11 at home and they win six on the road. So they've stacked their 17 wins, gives them the best chance to get themselves to a grand final to win the flag. That's what you have to do when you're a West Australian or a Queensland-based team. They're the facts, because the travel's just too taxing. So you look at their home games to come: Suns, Richmond, St Kilda, Melbourne, Adelaide, Sydney, Giants, Essendon. So they're going to win probably six out of eight of those minimum, potentially eight, but probably six, seven or eight. So they've still got to find – they can't be 6 from 11 on the road anymore. They've got to be better than that to get themselves into the top four hunt, because we know that you've probably got to win – now, Craig McRae talked on the weekend about they aim for 14 wins in the home and away season to play finals, and then they talk about 15 being the bottom range of a potential top four finish. With the extra game now – we elevate that to 16 wins. So they're off the mark. This is the problem, is that when they're starting to lose games at home, they're going to lose games on the road, because we talk all the time about on the road, 40% strike rate. Play a top eight team, 25% strike rate. Play a top four team, that snaps in half again. It goes to about 15%. So it's bloody hard. It's tough sledding now. So they've put themselves in this situation. We gave Chris Fagan huge raps for the way they set up and beat Melbourne. But as soon as that game turned to a wet weather game the other night, they had no idea how to set the field up. Chris Fagan had one-on-ones behind the ball. Chris Scott said, no. You're not having any fluky one-on-one victories hit the scoreboard against us. We'll be holding a loose man. And then when Stewart went down, Guthrie turned into Stewart for the next 45 minutes, 50 minutes of footy. They were not going to allow one matchup to hurt them. It was 2v1, it was 3v2, it was 4v2, and numbers swarming back. And it was nothing to do with efficiencies after that. So the game was going to be a dour game, and it was going to be twice as hard to score at one end as it was the other. And that's how it mapped out. Now you can argue about players doing this, players doing that, mistakes here, mistakes there. It was always going to be a mistake-laden game, but it was one in the coach's box. So you can't – I mean, it's hard for a Brisbane Lions supporter to hear that, I think. But when you watch that game, if you watch watching them behind the goals, you're thinking, how are they going to get through? And that is Geelong. I mean, notionally they defend their own goals first and take what comes after that, and back their talent to get it done in terms of scoring. But – I think they're in real trouble now, missing top four. So that changes everything, doesn't it? And I don't. If that's the case, well, we'll be talking in 6 weeks' time about whether they can win it or where you sit. But that's your own belief as to whether you can win it outside the top four. But it's they've got a fight on their hands.
So the other that side of that coin is Geelong, and you've got them in the they got that right category. And you're going to take us back to the 80s here. Just put a little bit of audio.
They're back.
They're annoying, Jared. They never really left. That was the last time they missed the finals, I reckon, Geelong, 1982. You just have to marvel at their ability to get the absolute best out of all their contributors. All their forwards seem to play such selfless football that not a lot has to go right for them individually to get the lick of the ice cream. And they're just so consistent. They're hard to play against. And so you have to give Geelong their credit. No, I didn't think they'd be as strong as this. And I agree a little bit with Nathan Buckley, what he said this morning. Yep, the quality of opposition hasn't quite been there. That's not their fault. They've done what they had to do in terms of the draw. But again, they're ranked number one on all of our stuff without the footy. You know, that's the benchmark and the hallmark of great teams, is being hard to play against and difficult to score against. So they're there again. their offensive stuff's around the mark, but it's not absolute because they're just going to be tough to play against. So good to see Danger back running around. Yeah, Stewart's going to be a loss. So they've got Carlton this week. Huge game. We're all going to look at that. But if they could beat Carlton without Tom Stewart, I think you go again, don't you? You elevate them again. Been waiting to see where they'd fall this year. I leave them out of the eight every year, and I apologise at about round 10. So maybe we go 4 weeks early this year, Jared. But they're just an amazing organisation.
It's their fusion of old and young, like at the moment, plus what they brought in.
Yeah. They just understand role. And they're all happy to just play their small part. You know, not every team gets that. It sounds really silly, but not every team gets that. And compare that to – compare what the Stars, Mitch Duncan. Compare what Mitch Duncan does week to week as opposed to Isaac Rankin, who's happy to get the spoils, who when he goes in at centre bounce, he wants to be the attacker, not, doesn't want to help defensively. Whereas these guys, whatever you need, coach, because they understand that all those little wins along the way stack up to a victory and you take the 4 points home at the end of the game. So there's an attitude at Geelong that's the envy of everyone.
All right, so the big issue, and they got that right out of the events from the Gabba on Saturday night. I feel the best bits were Bobby Hill's teamsmanship and Will Hoskin-Elliott's exploits, plus everything else that he did. And that was the true start of Collingwood's premiership defence.
Looked like Peter Knight.
That's very didn't good,
he?
Yeah.
He was unbelievable. I'm a bit different with the Collingwood discussion. I thought their ability to swarm was back, and I hadn't seen that. And that's the we talk about the swarm, people go, oh yeah, that's just getting numbers to the footy, and that's a pretty easy thing to do, and all that sort of stuff. The ability to swarm is an indicator of the buy-in of the group, that you've just got to keep fronting up, even though you're probably not going to get rewarded. But we want to make this 8v5, we want to make this 6v4. And get through. So it's not tactical necessarily. Of course, there's a tactical component to it for the players to be in a position to come and support, and you give up something to get something. But to have the players constantly turn up, and the little champ was back again, Nick Dacos doing it, just constantly rolling up, and that gut running to just be there, and then it all works. They put Port Adelaide under pressure they couldn't handle. And then when they got the ball back, they got it in. You know, they got it in quick. We'll talk about Port in a minute, but I think this is again one of those coaching performances you have to really admire. Even when they were on the rack mid game, you thought, "Wow, was it late first quarter, early second?"
Yeah, they were 31 down in the first quarter and 29 down in the second quarter.
Yeah,
and both times they were being stretched to their limit. It felt in real time,
and they kept showing the coach, and it was like, we're all waiting for this, you know, head in the hands sort of stuff, and it never come. And it was always, it's all right, we'll be okay, we'll be okay, we'll be okay, bang. Then it turned, and it's like this, it's like they embrace everything that they do well with such positivity, it just fuels itself. And once it starts rolling and the crowd get involved, it's over. The scores just come, it just flows. So, yeah, great performance, but I'm more particularly thrilled to see that swarm back. Whenever you see that swarm with Collingwood and the ball stays in live play, the bobbling ball is Collingwood's delight. Good to watch, wasn't it?
It was great to watch, and that's what fueled so much of last year. The environment, the way they play, the joy with which they play once it's back. So there'd been a stress around them early and the mistakes that they were making. Everyone runs their own pet theories. There's no coincidence that this has happened the other side of the bye. They were behind coming into the season. They've staggered through the first 5 weeks. They get it. Now their campaign gets going.
Yeah, it's hard. And we assess them week to week. People take offence because you're saying they're off. You know, They were off. Yeah. So you need to see it before you can endorse it. And I think the rundown chase and tackle from McCreary on Butters is a moment that every player can't miss. There are things in games you just don't see as a player, like some of the clearance work and some of the efficiencies. You can be concentrating on other things and getting your own. But when someone runs flat out for 50 metres to lay a tackle on Butters, who can seriously travel, like he can go, and you go, wow, we're on here. And you feel the lift. So that McCreary impact on Collingwood is more than what people give it credit for.
And I felt Bobby Hill's moment where he gives a goal to Lachie Schultz. Now, Lachie Schultz is making heavy weather of his arrival at Collingwood.
Yeah.
He gives him that goal, and then almost in the next phase of play, he stands in a crush in the goal square and takes a big overhead mark. Like, one begets the next. And this is the value of teamsmanship. So what Bobby Hill did on Saturday, he would have given off four goals, each for the greater good. The McRae edict, they're not your goals, they're our goals.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the luxury of having a Norm Smith in your back pocket, but that's what it looks like. Yes, you can kick all those goals yourself if you want, but these are the team goals. And it had a material impact on the the way the team grew.
I don't want to sound disrespectful, okay? So I hope this comes out the right way. But watching that game back again Saturday night late, I'm sitting there thinking, am I really tracking vision of these role players? Look, Hoskin Elliott, role player. But Bobby Hill, Norm Smith medalist and an elite performer on the given games here and there. But essentially that position is a role player position. Lipinski. Role player. They were three critical players in this game. And I think, well, if you've got three role players in your top four or five on ground, like, things are good.
Yeah.
Right? Things are good. So I think there's a lot to take from that the role player performance at Collingwood is significant and has elevated. I mean, Nick Dacos is Nick Dacos. We can't keep talking about Nick. And he has such an impact on their scoring ability. But the role players got it done, G.
So the other side of that coin, and I do think Port Adelaide have put themselves in the pressure index here, because when the pressure came, they wilted. So they had it on their terms, and they exerted hellish pressure on Collingwood early, which had them skittish. But once it came back at them, Steel Sidebottom gave a little insight into this on Breakfast this morning.
I believe that if we're bringing our best to pressure, then not many teams can match it. But we spoke about going into the game that their sort of pressure that they've had applied against them hasn't been to where we sort of pride our pressures on. So if we were able to bring it, then we thought we might be able to bring them undone. Yeah.
You don't want teams saying that about you. That if you let them play, they'll get you. But if you really want to take things off them, you can. That's in a short grab, and he's not being disrespectful. Nope. He's just saying this is how it is. If you let them play, they'll get us. But if we're prepared to engage and put them under a bit of heat, they'll wilt. And that's damning. And I think Ken Hinckley would take that to heart. And I wouldn't be surprised if they play that. Because one of Ken's famous quotes is, can you handle the heat? We've got to handle the heat. We've got to get the ball from inside to outside. We've got to take some tackle pressure. We've got to absorb what they're throwing at us. Well, now they're saying the opposite. Port Adelaide can't handle the heat. That's not from us. That's from inside a football club, the best club performing in the land at the moment, back, the reigning premiers. So I look at Port and I want to go to a different area. I want to go to their defensive half. So if you look at winning, if you don't win contest in your defensive half, the opposition score. Simple as that. If they bring the ball down the ground and you can't win it back, and it's always in contest, then you're in massive trouble. You won't stop them scoring. So they're ranked 17th at the moment, Port Adelaide, for winning contest in their defensive half. And I look at the two big boppers. Asava Alier, I'm going to call them. Asava Alier, the two of them combined, are on watch. Because to me, they've got awkward matchups more often than not because they want to hold a position. I thought Craig McRae was able to get them onto players they couldn't clamp. And three, four, five steps and they were 4 metres off. Guys like Elliott, Lipinski at times, McCreary at times. I know there's some nominal tall matchups down there, but when we had Zerk Thatcher on Cox at times and on Majacek. So they were getting pulled apart trying to be what they want to be. That's a bad space to live in. Only had 5 intercepts each, which is low. So if you're going to be the intercept player, you've got to win contests and be the intercept player. Otherwise, what are you? You're a bad matchup. So for me, they're on watch. And I can't wait to see what they're like in 5 weeks' time. Because if that doesn't work, where to then? Because this is be careful what you wish for. Because this is what you went and recruited as the answer, as the fix. Re-sign the coach, charging forward, flag opportunity. Asavalia has to work.
Asavalia on our little watch. All right. We'll have the debate next. We'll glance an eye towards Western Australia and the must-see TV that's going on over there. Must-see TV. Appointment viewing. Melbourne's weather, sunny, a top of 23. United Energy's year-round vegetation inspection and cutting program is keeping communities safe.
I don't want to see A-Rod today.
No Hawthorn memory.
Take him away. Take him away.
It's been a long 2.5 years, so the smiles on some of the players' faces have been through that, and coaches have done so much work. That's really pleasing. Our supporters have stuck by us as well. It's 2 games, so it's hard to be. The reality is it's a tough season, and for us to be competitive, we've got to be dialed in every week.
So do it. Adam Simpson there. What a great derby win it was. Just the shock and awe of the first 7 goals, and then Harley Reid gets to work. And so our open question, Kingy, and you can set the terms for this. Has Harley Reid saved Western Australia?
Well, I'm kind of glad he went there. I know this sounds silly because he has. I mean, the energy that he's brought to the Eagles. If he'd have gone to the Kangaroos, I can tell you what the headlines would have been now. Oh, another handout for the Kangaroos. Oh, this guy, oh, well, you didn't really. You tanked to get him. Like, if they'd have tanked that game against the Suns, we would have never, Harley would have been linked with tanking for his whole career. But because that didn't happen, he's able to go and be himself and play over there. Everyone had their opinion on whether he should go and what he'd do. And the opinions were, I remember them vividly. Why would you go to the 18th ranked club and be the man for 10 years with no success? Well, that couldn't be further from the truth 6 weeks in. It couldn't be further from the truth. And is it the chicken or the egg? Did Elliot Yeo and Tim Kelly decide to give the kid the armrest? You come with us, just jump in our wake. We'll tow you along and we'll show you how to win contested footy. We'll get our clearance game going. You'll love it. Or did he come in and say, look, I'm sick of you blokes just meandering around. I'm going to take control. I'm going to play with a physicality and an anger and just a competitive spirit that you haven't seen around here for a little while. The Fife thing where he bumped into him and he said, no, hey, whoa, and pushed him to ground is not really it's a small moment, right? But it's a window into his mind that I'm not getting pushed around by anyone. And I thought it was brilliant. So it's just the perfect fit. Sometimes things just work out because they're perfect fit. And he's an elite talent. He was always going to be a very good AFL player, but we didn't think this good this quickly.
So he's a transformational figure in a way that we're not really used to in the AFL. This is what happens in the NBA when you get the number one draft pick and he changes your 5 players on the court. Our sport has always been such a broad proposition and we don't really believe in that. But he has been transformative in that team's fortunes instantly.
Yeah, he has. And so the chicken or the egg, which one do you believe?
I think his presence has changed everything.
So the egg.
If that's the egg, yes.
Well, I think it's the egg, isn't it? The young one, you can't get much younger than an egg.
Okay, I'm the egg then. Are you the chicken or the egg?
I'm the egg. Yep. I think he's challenged all of them. So the contested possession stuff that Simo had been talking about for a while, the small wins. We just want to be good in the contest. So against Sydney +8, that was when we started to see it. Remember, gather around, we said, hey, this is really good. And they just missed a couple of moments and didn't quite capitalise on a dominant period in that second quarter in the hills of Adelaide. +38 against Richmond, +24 against Fremantle. They are seriously tough now. Second best contested possession team in the competition right now, despite being where they are on the ladder. So again, be hard to play against, make us proud. So I think every West Coast Eagles fan right now, no one's talking about sacking the coach. No one's upset with where they're at. They understand they come off a premiership run and an they maybe reached for an extra year or two trying to re-establish, which is what all the good ones do. And they're going against it. Elliot Yeo, the last 3 weeks, top three in the competition for contested possessions, top three for clearances. I think he's number one for score involvements, and he's had half a dozen shots at goals himself. So I think there's a lot to do with their leaders. And I love the way they talk. They all know they're in a rebuild phase, but we're going to enjoy the ride.
Ross Glendening should have walked out and just taken control of things and given the medal to Harley Reid.
You know what, Ross let the theatre. He let football down the weekend, Ross.
He's got form. He can do it.
Do you think he was rattled by not getting over the previous error of 25 years ago? I reckon even Ashley Sampey would have given that to Harley Reid. David Mundy. Come on, David. Oh, it just would have been such a great story.
Yeah.
And such a moment for the football club. Maybe that's why he didn't do it, David.
Maybe.
Maybe ultimately Fremantle had a small win in the Derby.
If there was a ballot paper this coming week that had Harley Reid and Basil Zemplis on it, who would win office in Western Australia?
Basil would be lucky to score.
Harley
that's
Reid.
Good. Hey? It's a good story, isn't it?
It is. It is. We're going to just the Fremantle side of the coin and a little more broadly, the curiosity. Some teams still believe that bland is beautiful. We'll do that in a moment. GWS is challenging both suspensions, Jesse Hogan and Toby Green. So we're going to debate that shortly. Mitch Cleary has just posted that confirmation. Here is Nathan in the newsroom. Nathan, thank you. So a curiosity, Kingy, that teams who believe that bland is beautiful, and you've been on red alert for this for 18 months.
So there's nothing worse than watching a slow burn at AFL level. We put on the radar the Adelaide Crow midfield very early, and they resisted that and they didn't like that feedback and wasted 2 weeks before they corrected. Now their season's over. The St Kilda Football Club have that discussion right now. Do something about this mix or just meander along with meaningless football for another 6 weeks. And I think when you look, it's more about the mix. You don't need four dancers in at centre bounces. You don't, but you need one. You can't just have Ross, Steele, Windhager and the Ruckman and expect to burst out of clearance. It's not going to happen. Carlton have Sam Walsh in there. He's zipping and zapping and ducking and diving everywhere. You have to have someone that maybe isn't the absolute ball winner that's first receive, that can go, that can travel. So get someone in there that can. And I don't care whether it's Brad Hill. Sinclair's not that player at the moment. I don't know what's happened with Jack Sinclair. I don't know whether his health's there or not. But they've been reluctant to use him in there, and he hasn't been as effective when he's gone in there. So that's St Kilda's problem, and we're going to watch that. Fremantle, their ball movement is so boring that it saps them of their own energy, their own drive. And they kick back against this. And Nathan Buckley said, oh, it's a character assassination. Nothing to do with him as a person. We're talking about the personality of this team is boring. They were 4, 5, 6 goals down on the weekend, and they start chipping the ball around. I'm going, what are you doing? Well, time is going to run out. You've got to play. You've got to go. And then the explanation's always the same. They looked timid in the contest. And I just wonder whether so much uncontested game has taken away from their ability to engage in the fight, because they weren't really breaking tackles. They weren't threatening to step through holes. They weren't getting the ball from inside to outside. And then they drop into this other mode. And I look at it and I say, I don't care how many home and away games you win playing like that. I just don't care. It will not win in September. And we've had this discussion before again about Fremantle, and they don't like it. But show me where that's worked, and I'll come back to your side of the coin. But right now, they've got to fix this bland brand of football, because it's not going to help.
All right, the curiosity in the teams who are being bland. We'll debate the Toby Green collision and the suspensions that are facing both Green and Hogan that the Giants are going to challenge. They've got Brisbane, so these are high stakes tribunals. Tomorrow night. This is Waitley for Hyundai. Drive away in a Hyundai Staria load from $49,490. The Giants are heading to the tribunal to see if they can get their full forwards and their captain off for the game on Anzac night against the Lions. The debate is for New Vision Clinics. New Vision Clinics, keyhole laser vision, next generation technology. I feel sympathy for Toby Green. Not on the old and tired stuff around the Toby tax and getting singled out. I just feel like in this instance where he's the leading forward having the ball kicked to him, in the confluence of events, how can he get out of that collision without being suspended? So you played the game, King. Just step me through what Green did wrong. Because everyone's done their job right so far. I just want to be clear on that. The MRO has to grade this. It should be a one-week suspension. And then we get to debate the nuance of it. What did he do wrong?
So he's coming at the ball. So he's got vision of the ball and what's in front of him. What's coming back. So he sees him. And then he's trying to work out the timing of when the ball's likely to arrive versus the opposition player, all those sorts of things. He would have been in this situation 1,000 times. So he, in my opinion, he understands that he's going to have to either find speed to get there quickly, which he does, and then the moment he doesn't think he can arrive and take the mark, he turns and braces to protect himself. That's the problem. That's the problem. And people are having a tough time understanding that. But at that point, you put your safety above the other player. Why do we say that's fine when the game, in a legal sense, has a duty of care for both parties? So you take one above the other.
What should he have done?
What should he have done? Well, I don't think he did a lot wrong. So we talk about this every week. I think Chris O putting it to the tribunal is the perfect route. If you want to argue it, go and argue
it. That's right, yep.
I keep saying it. I don't like the assessment format we have. It needs to have a different table of its own. If we're going to really look after the head trauma side of things, let's do it in a reasonable, common sense fashion. It has to have a level of intent. I don't think at any point Toby Green had the intention of hurting the other player. And in fact, the other player got up Boyd and took his kick and the game rolled on. So I would be more than comfortable with him getting off, right? But I think we have to go through this phase to come out the other side, because if we don't, we'll be stuck in the same situation of constant head trauma and concussion and losing players like Nathan Murphy again.
Yep. I've just been trying to think through this, how to make the case tomorrow night. So when Green leaves the ground, he has to make the case that he was going to be able to take the mark. And I don't know whether he can or he can't. So at what point does he cock the shoulder?
He can't mark the ball with his
The question is, did he leave the ground thinking he was going to take the mark and then took evasive action? So that's his only way out tomorrow night, is that it's not a brace or a bump. It's just simply evasive action.
It's a brace.
Then I don't think he can beat it.
I don't think I think he's got a tough case to beat it. I'm not hell-bent on this one because I don't think he went to hurt himself. And the question keeps coming back at me, but he's allowed to protect himself. I don't know if he's allowed to protect himself at the expense of the other player. That's the significant part that people are leaving out. So when he jumps, does he have all the information? Does he know he's late when he jumps? And you can argue that. And you talk to a player you need to talk to Dermot about this. When he jumps, does he know he's late? Right? And if he knows he's late, then it's all about protecting himself and making forceful contact. If he's not sure when he jumps, then I can understand. I've got some empathy for him. But again, these players have been in this situation thousands of times, and they understand the split seconds involved.
Yeah, so it's the last step and leaving the ground. That's where the decision is, rather than in the final moment of contact.
Yeah, so
it's the approach to the contest.
Well, it's as late as that.
Yeah,
put it that way. So if we can at the end of this season, I think we need a new table with the levels of intent. Did you mean to hurt the other? You know, were you going after the other player in effect? There's levels to that. The player got up and moved on. The game's fine with what Toby did because he didn't really set out to hurt him and he didn't maim him. Peter Wright made severe contact, didn't he?
Yes.
It's a different discussion.
I could make the case that Green's done a good job not to injure Boyd here. So he's turned the shoulder, which is you've been asked not to do. Yeah. Don't turn the shoulder. Turned the shoulder, so he's in the wrong there.
Yeah.
Some people say it's just dumb luck. I'm not sure that it is. I don't think the same velocity is there. That's where I would draw the nuance. One player ends up concussed, one player gets up.
So the other argument that comes back at me when I go with this is, why should Toby Green risk his own safety as well and stay open, square on, chest towards contact rather than shoulder towards contact? Why should he be expected to not protect himself in that circumstance? Well, my answer to that is, if you are that late that you've got time and you've still got time to turn and ready yourself for contact, well, there are other options. What if he just puts his hands out?
Yep.
That's enough. You've got to show that you're trying something other than the bump or brace.
Yep. Yep. So who made contact inevitable? I think that'll be part of the legal case. And then was it evasive action rather than the bump or the brace?
You've got to show some other form that you're not trying to hurt the other player. You've got to show some other action.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. And the players are having trouble working out in real time because they've always done this. But there is a lag period. We have to go through this lag period to come out the other side.
So the habitual change in behaviour is don't turn the shoulder ever
and
in
flush
that
him.
Circumstance.
And flush him.
Okay. So it'll get argued.
It is amazing how often the player turns his shoulder and happens to hit the other player in the head. Just amazes me. They don't have no idea what they're doing for those split seconds, but they always hit that player in the head.
Yep. All right. The debate for New Vision Clinics, New Vision Clinics Keyhole Laser Vision, next generation technology. Call 1-800-20-20-20. They got that wrong. The Suns barely laid a glove on the Swans yesterday, did they? Which was the re-establishment of Sydney, but they didn't meet their markers, Gold Coast, in an environment where they've had success.
Yeah. Just, they can disappoint you, the Suns, can't they? There was a patch in the third quarter where they kicked 8 goals in a row. They kicked 8-4 from 17 entries. And I look at that back line and I say, okay, this is why I look at Ben King and I say, can you give this team more at centre-half back than you're giving them at full forward? And you're a reasonable commodity at full forward, but you're not a warrior. The kid next to you, Jed Walters, is embarrassing you for competitiveness, really. Does Collins need help or replacing? Does Ballard need help or replacing? Does Lukosius need help or replacing? Are you obligated to have a look at a different option? Something that's not going to allow, every second entry being a goal. And who is their guy? And they're good. They're a good defensive program normally. They're hard to move the ball against and those sorts of things. But I think that Damien's assessing everything. Wouldn't be lost on him what's happening. And this is the phase where he does have that luxury and they've gone really young. So when they lose the handle of games, it's probably hard to get it back. I think he's got some levers that he'll pull over the next few weeks. I wouldn't want to be a non-competitive key position back at the moment.
Yep. And Sydney?
Well, they just do what they do. They get you with beautiful ball movement. They're silky ball users in Goulden and Heaney and Warner's in really good form again. They just make everything work. They make every post a winner. I don't know where Sydney are. I don't know where they reside. I don't know if they're in the top four or their top six or they're somewhere. Are they just going to be a dangerous team, But I'm sort of holding on Sydney until Parker comes back because I think he could be a serious talent in the forward half. We've seen him have, 4-goal games playing as that marking, Paul Chapman type, that hybrid sort of on the ground yet in the air as well, third tall. So I'm waiting to see a bit more leadership in that forward half that doesn't have to be Heaney because what he's doing is working for him. So jury's out still for me, but we love watching him play.
Yep.
But I love watching Tom Papley. I mean, seriously, when he brings that energy, it's infectious, Like they keep saying, you just want your boys to make you proud. When you see the energy and the oomph and the pizzazz that he plays with, it's hard not to get involved.
All right. So that's our means test categories. We have the seedings to bring it all to its climax. We were together at crunch time on Saturday. So the deep dive into Thursday night and Friday night really is in crunch time this week. All right, so there's a bit of work to be done on the seedings, I reckon. Let's see how they land next. We haven't quite got to everything we wanted.
Gee, I had a couple of things to go. I'll tell you what I wanted to do. I wanted to give Buku Kamas a big rap for what he's becoming for the Dogs down back. And I did want to give Essendon a bit of a tick. 50 intercepts between the arcs on the weekend. They've only done that three times in the last 100 games. So if they're going to improve like that defensively, then they're going to be a totally different team to talk about. So we'll do that next week.
Ladder makes sense.
Ladder
so
makes
seedings,
sense.
I wonder. The seedings are for Tyre Power. Tyre Power power-up sale is now on.
This has never made sense.
I don't think that's the aim. All right, what do you want to do at four?
At four, I've gone back to the Demons.
Oh, stayed in the stable and found a place in the seedings.
Yeah, because I just think maybe their best has been as good as anyone's. And I could have had them a little bit higher, to be honest, but I got them at four.
I've got Giants at four.
Geez, that's a slide.
They were good in defeat, but they are going to be without, I think they're going to be without Green and Hogan.
No,
and Green Taylor.
Green will get off. You walk in, you say, if this guy wanted to kill him, he could have killed him. He's a natural born killer, this bloke.
Three?
Three, the Cats. Made their way in and up a rung or two. So Geelong and Melbourne in for me. This is a pretty handy team.
Yep, Geelong at three. That was my play-in game. They had to go to the Gabba and knock the Lions out.
I forgot about the play-in
game. And they did just that. So they're 6-0. The Carlton game is just delicious.
Yeah, it is. A small slide for me at two, GWS. I had to drop them down a rung. Still played very well. Without Taylor, they look different down back. So there's some scope. Lekalier, did you see Lekalier spoiling?
Yes.
My God. I don't think I've seen a better spoiler. Have you seen a better spoiler?
I've got Collingwood at two. That was a performance so compelling and a reminder of what the standard has been.
Where did they come from? What number?
So they're, what are they, 11th on the ladder, but they're two in the seedings. You go, no, if you're going to play that footy.
They're two.
Yep. And I nearly had them won. In fact, I left the MCG driving home thinking Collingwood's my one seed.
No.
But then I got home and watched Carlton. And the Blues are my natural one seed. 6 out of 7 weeks, they've been my one seed.
I can't believe this. You got Collingwood.
Yeah.
You're easily won, aren't you?
No, that was.
You swayed quickly.
That was just, that's a return to what we've known. It wasn't an outlier. That was the, I know what this is. I love what this is.
Carlton, for me, they're the most complete model we've got at the minute. I think that their clearance game's back, their turnover game's strong, their injury list will correct over the next few weeks, and I think we're going to see a better version of them in round 12 than what we're seeing now.
I reckon you're slow on Collingwood.
Well, I didn't say I was slow. I think you're very adventurous with your seedings this week. I think you've forgotten a few teams.
The seedings for Tyre Power. Tyre Power, think safety this month. Get the 5-minute tyre safety check at your local Tyre Power. Don't get mad about our seedings.
No.
Put your own in.
Oh, please don't.
40 Wings Temper Tech 0433 98 11 16. Temper, a mattress like no other.
I've got a guy getting stuck in the mirror here about Sydney. I've been staunch with the Swans. I'm just a bit concerned where they're at the minute.
I actually enjoyed the one that started. Kingy, you dimwit.
Yeah, I haven't called a dimwit in a long time. Well done.
The Monday Means Test for Jameson Irish Whiskey, triple distilled, twice as smooth, one of a kind. Gather round. Thanks, Kingy.
Rob Mozzle was you.
I don't think anything prompts a bigger response than the seedings. Collingwood in. Sounds like Jared's Brownlow multi. Yes, it has that feel about it. Andrew. Jared, you've made my day. The Pies are back. You've lost the plot, Jared. How you've got a 3-3 team above a 5-0 team is beyond me. You guys are sleeping on Sydney big time. They're currently 6-1 with their captain and two most experienced players to come back in. Mills, Parker, Rampy. Are going to make a massive difference. That might be theoretically true. Guys, there's only one guarantee in the Toby Green case. The Charlie Cameron good guy defence will fail. That's Michelle from Baldwin. Craig from Coburg North. Has there ever been a draftee who has had such an impact on a team as Harley Reid? He has single-handedly given West Coast belief and backbone. Incredible. Time to get rid of the goal umpires. Yesterday, North versus Hawthorn, the goal umpire in perfect position was calling for a review, which I could see watching my dad's 20-year-old SD TV. That's from Adam. I can't cop that North should have lost last year for Harley Reid. It means the only win for North in the last 13 months is actually a loss. What an absolutely bleak situation this is. That's from Nick. Turning away from contact is a human reflex, though. It's closing your eyes when the gun goes off. Stop watching incidents in slow motion and you'll start getting the right decisions from the MRO. Don't turn your shoulder. At basketball, a player would have avoided head contact in that situation. Why can't footballers? North Melbourne member driving 3 hours this weekend to take my three-year-old daughter to her first game. Does this make me a bad parent? After yesterday, it could be horrible to watch. And Jared, if you had a half hour of free airspace, just make it Carlton talkback on the third quarter alone. The noise was contagious all over the ground. Rob from Avondale Heights. That's a little cross-section of your reactions to the means test. Just run through the theories on the seedings for me. So Carlton and Geelong are about to play. Perfect. So I get to slide Geelong up if they beat Carlton. Otherwise, I've got him in the right place. Collingwood play Essendon. Carlton, Collingwood 1 and 2. If they both happen to win, they're 1 versus 2. What would the WWE do? That's all I'm saying. 0433 98 11 16 40 Wings Temper Text Temper, a mattress like no other. So after the nonsense, we need a bit of wisdom and experience. That's Robert Craddock on a Monday for CD Motor Group. Tax time savings at Ferntree Gully Hyundai. Hello to you, Crash.
G'day, Jared. What a lively bunch of texts they were, weren't they? Good on you, mate. Firing them up on a Monday morning, I love it.
It's the most passionate time of the week. Now, Crash, I'm calling it the Shamar Joseph curse. Since the West Indies breached the Gabba, it's no longer safe for the occupants. They're getting raided all the time. Lions have lost all three.
It's a great observation, haven't they? Like, it was the fortress, wasn't it? And Brisbane undefeated here last year, lost all three this year. And you know what, Jared? I reckon it was a fork in the road moment on Saturday night. Sitting at home, like thousands of Brisbane fans, switching from the Broncos trouncing Canberra to the Lions seemingly stuck in the mud at the Gabba. And it's just, this year was always going to be about sports psychology in Brisbane. How would the two teams recover from being 5 minutes away from a grand final and losing it? Of course, the Lions losing to Collingwood and the Broncos losing to Penrith.
Yep.
And, you know, it's such an interesting thing, isn't it, Jared? Because the Broncos, they sort of surprised themselves by getting to the grand final last year. So they're still going up and they're fine. But the Lions, after that 5 year of hard toil, I just reckon that was their peak in that grand final, and they won't. That could be the peak of a generation. But can I just say? So I did that for my column yesterday, and I was driving around Brisbane. I ran into Jason Ackermanis,
yep,
out selling a house, just to get ready for an open house. He's a real estate agent selling one in Kent Street. And I told him about this column I had. He said, "No, mate, you're off the mark." He said, the Lions, he said, in 2001, we'd won just four of our first nine games and never dropped another game. And he said, so who are you going off way too early? Which, so that convinced me I was right. I love Acker.
Yeah. they're a big watch now and getting beaten at the Gabba so often. Righto, the biggest international sports story, Crash, is the revelations that in the lead up to the Tokyo Olympics, 23 Chinese swimmers tested positive to a banned substance, but they were cleared of any wrongdoing. This is the classic lack of transparency. And then years later, what on earth are we to make of it? It's been speculated upon and theorized and analyzed. So on the Today Show today, sports lawyer Tim Fuller, who was part of the Shayna Jack case, offered his view on how this story looks.
I find that highly implausible. All 23, I mean, what were the concentration levels in their system? There's a lot of unknowns. There's more questions than answers. I don't think anybody's seen laboratory documentation, information, et cetera, expert reports. So there's just so many unknowns around this. But I think probably the biggest concern is the fact that while China Anti-Doping Authority made this decision, WADA has just waved this through and they've all competed, obviously, in Tokyo and after. I don't think it's the end of this matter. The Americans have been very strong in their opposition to this decision and they have powerful laws to investigate perceived crimes in relation to sport that involves any American athletes, and of course the Tokyo Olympics involved American athletes, so They can bring in the FBI. They have strong legislation. I think we'll hear more about this over time.
So tapping your wisdom and experience, Crash, my first reaction, so before you delve into the guilt or innocence or mistake, it's a shocking cover-up.
Oh, well, that's the thing. Let's just put China to one side for the minute. WADA were told about this. And not only did they let these athletes continue to compete, which was, you know, a crime in itself, not only did they not even stand them down, which was terrible, they didn't notify the world, which should have been the absolute basic requirement. I mean, if you've had to put it out there, people would have laughed at them and they would have gone hard at them, but at least they're being transparent about what action they took. If they had said, look, we accept their findings. But to not do that makes it absolutely scandalous. And I know WADA, there's a bit of an uncivil war happening within the four walls of WADA at the moment. Some people are saying, well, you know, we believed what they told us. And others are saying, my God, how can we not put that out? That's outrageous. And it is. It's scandalous. It will stop anyone ever trusting them again. And if you haven't got trust as a World Anti-Doping Association, what have you got? Because, you know, you're supposed to be the police, the good cops, you know, the people who keep the system transparent. And if you jump into bed with China and said, no, we accept that, no scrutiny, I mean, it's laughable, Jared, honestly.
So there's two possibilities with 23 swimmers testing positive. One is it's either systematic doping, or two, it's a dreadful case of contamination. And you had to be able to resolve which it was.
Well, let's just strip this back to its most basic form. They're saying the contamination happened over, you know, various spice racks and things in food at the food hall. But hang on, it's a tablet. This TMZ, the drug, the heart drug that's used by old people, it's a prescription drug. You can't just buy it in a chemist and have it lying around. You have to be prescribed it. And so if you're cooking with it, what, you drop it in a stew, do you? And then you crunch it up and then it goes to 23 different people? Jared, it's just, it's laughable, that defence. It really is. I mean, how could it happen like that? I mean, it was the same drug that Sun Yang, the swimmer who famously Mac Horton called out after his drug-taking episode, that was his drug, you know. And it's not a drug that is randomly sitting around kitchens. I mean, it's prescription. It's an old people's drug. But what it does, it gives athletes more stamina. And, Jared, I know this will sound funny, but one of the images I have after covering the Beijing Olympics was how absolutely fastidious the Chinese were. During that games, I mean, just everything was organised to within a square centimetre of its life. There was no rubbish on the streets. There was no mess in the restaurants. And so this is how, you know, you're talking about a really fastidious, well-organised race of people. And what you're telling me? Someone left these tablets around. They just happened to pop into the curry or the bread and butter pudding. Oh, gosh, leave me out of that one.
Yeah, so we're inside 100 days to the Olympic Games. What will it do to the pool deck, do you think? What will it do to the swimming program?
Oh, this story has to live on to the Games. And congratulations to Julian Lindon, you know, from News Corp, from, you know, being at the front end of it and breaking it on Saturday. It will get bigger before it gets smaller, as cover-ups always do when they're exposed, won't they? And I think it casts an asterisk beside anything China achieves in this Games. Jared, because you ask yourself this, if it was a matter of systematic doping, and doesn't it look like that, if they covered it up then, the question, what are they covering up now?
Yes, and the Sun Yang case, which has gone on for years, the dissatisfaction on that front, so the suspicion and the acrimony that has built up in Australian swimmers, which, as you rightly point out, has been given voice at various stages, and now that it be so widespread, it does, I just think for WADA, it makes them look like they're happy to go after the soft target. But when it's big and challenging, It feels like they ran scared into a corner.
Oh, yeah. And I was staggered when I heard several of their big-time US critics open fire on WADA on Saturday evening. WADA said, well, we've engaged our lawyers to look at your criticism. I was thinking, oh, geez, hey, that'd be the second worst decision I've ever seen to go to court, apart from Bruce Lerman. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You wouldn't want to fight that one in court, WADA. Criticism for your actions over a two-year cover-up over a group drug case to an illegal drug that has to be prescribed, and you're trying to defend your actions. I just can't believe it. Well, there aren't too many stories. I think Jared, you'd have to say shocked but not surprised. That was my reaction when I saw it. Like, I was staggered by the cover up, but then you realise that's modern sport, isn't it? There's always so much happening behind the scenes. What was your reaction?
It's just so disappointing, and the lack of transparency around it is the most worrying part, and then you can work backwards from there. But I'm always staggered, Crash, that these people with serious experience think that this wouldn't come out. How could you honestly believe that 23 positive tests to a banned substance ahead of an Olympic Games would never come out?
Yep, especially since they were aware that a German television station had been investigating it for 6 months, really drilling down on it, you know, and looking at all these untied threads. And so the fact that you were trying to defend that, you know, there would have been smart people might have said, let's make an announcement and get out ahead of it. And sure, we're going to cop it, but let's, in the interests of belated transparency, let's say something. But they just sat there.
Mm.
And even on the weekend, they had to be really flushed out, WADA, to say anything. Then, of course, when they did say something, they were in full defensive mode. So I just, honestly, it is so disappointing. But, you know, I look back at some of the things that our swimmers faced in the 1980s. Remember Lisa Curry when she faced, you know, Chinese women, and we had photos in the paper of them on the weekend, these giantly amazing, statuesque, swimmers that quite, you know, how did they get in that condition, you know?
Yes, it does shake the faith in these things, and particularly so close to the next Olympics. The wisdom and experience of Robert Craddock on a Monday. The Eagles are going to join the Giants at the Tribunal tomorrow night, so West Coast to challenge the ban of Tom Barras for a dangerous tackle. So the full suite heading to the Tribunal tomorrow night. Jake Fraser-McGurk, he's tearing it up in the IPL at the moment. Is he getting himself into contention for the T20 World Cup? We'll pose that to Crash next. Melbourne's weather, sunny, a top of 23. United Energy's year-round vegetation inspection and cutting program is keeping communities safe.
Once again, giving some room, and that's been put away for four. Again, too short and too wide.
Just stand like a baseball, a bat high up in the air. Taking the pace off like that.
Because again, this is going for four. It's too short, too slow, and sitting up to be hit.
Nah, he's giving him room again. He's panicked.
Again, short, and again, the same area. 30 runs coming off that. Three sixes and three fours in that over.
But if he continues to bat like this, as his 50 comes up in 15 deliveries.
Jake Fraser-McGurk's hitting exploits are the talk of the IPL right now. 65 from 18 balls, five fours and seven sixes. It was in the game where Pat Cummins was the opposing captain and Travis Head had turned in a man of the match, 89 from 32 balls. And Robert Craddock, this is three innings for Jake Fraser-McGurk in the premier T20 domestic competition in the world. It does start to spin the question, at what point might he be an irresistible bolter for the Australian World Cup squad later this year?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Jared, and it could happen. I mean, Steve Smith has been floating around that last position. And it'd be sort of, isn't the world produced some funny stats? Like, imagine if Smith missed out for a guy whose first-class batting average is 18.
Yes.
But we're not talking about first-class cricket here. We're talking power hitting. And he's got something special about him, hasn't he? It's just, and I love the balance he plays with these beautiful big shots. And he hit Pat Cummins for a six. That was part of the highlights just then. So that's a good way to get noticed.
Yep.
Hit your test captain over the fence. He's picked his slower ball. But I agree with Michael Clarke that if he plays, he nearly has to open for the power play when the field is up and you just say, Jake, go your hardest. You know, just unleash. And that would be the way to do it. And can already see opposition spinners maybe opening with a spin bowler who pushes the ball wide of off stump and maybe spins it away like Jadeja and says, hey, I know you love hitting him over mid-wicket, but try dragging this one across your stumps under the pressure of a World Cup game. So he's definitely – what I like about the prospect of him playing, Jared, is our team's getting very old. And I love to see some youth in it. And if he has a good year, Jake Fraser-McGurk, he could become the most influential Australian cricketer of the next year, because I think so many young kids will look at him and say, look at that. He's a power hitter, and he's gone from a standing start into the Australian team and earning big money in the IPL in just a year, where it's so hard to do in Sheffield Shield and Test cricket. You've got to be patient. Kids love that instant success story. And I just think if he gets there, already he's influential, but you'll see many more kids practicing like Jake in the next. Kabang, kapow. You know, it's that. And that's not a bad thing for the game. It keeps it alive and vibrant.
It's so Australia sort of tipped its hand over the summer. They wanted to integrate him into the first national teams, but they did it in the 50-over game because he wasn't in their World Cup planning for later this year. So they didn't want to disrupt the T20 team, but they wanted him to get a taste because he's in the next cycle. And that's what's, I think, so significant about these innings is could he just knock the door down and go, yeah, I know we were thinking about him as a futures project, but maybe the future will be now. And that question is the same game. Head makes 89 from 32, or Fraser-McGurk batting behind Warner, who failed, makes 65 from 18. And there's that question. Well, should it in fact be Head and Fraser-McGurk, which wasn't even vaguely on the horizon?
No, it wasn't. There was a throwaway sentence from Andrew McDonald at the end of the season where he said, look, we're not rushing into finalising our T20 World Cup team because we've got the IPL. And he said, what better trial ground could you have than the world's best players playing together? I have to say, Jared, the game's gone too far in India with these batting wickets, the short boundaries and these ultra super flat decks. I mean, scores of 280, that's too much for mine.
Yeah.
I mean, in the Big Bash last year, which I thought was a terrific competition, the highest score was 213. And you know what? It felt about right. I think we get so obsessed about big hitting that sometimes we forget the joy of seeing a batsman under pressure when he's played out an over for three runs and seeing him get a bit tense and beautiful bowling and all that. Whereas when it's carnage all the way, like, it's just like stuffing your mouth with chips and gravy, you know. Like, I don't mind a little bit of chips and gravy, but, you know, like, I can do without a tub full of it every day. So that's how it felt a bit, and I just feel they've gone too far, too far.
So it becomes then, what is it going to look like in the West Indies and the US? So if, just say this was the setup, then you would want to have the most ruthless exploiters of that, wouldn't you? If you're going to have to make 280 or chase 280, you wouldn't want to be caught napping with batting setups that are favouring 220.
No, that is true. They used to have the rolled mud wickets of the West Indies, which were slowish and lowish, but they'll be of a reasonable standard, and that's where Australia is basically playing. But you're right. It's just that he does play at another dimension, and it's good. Would be good to have him up his sleeve, even if he wasn't in the actual run on first 11. But He's such an interesting player, isn't he? I mean, even if his number, national number 23, a throwback to Warnie and all the showmanship of that, and, you know, a guy who embraces the sort of stardom of the whole thing. And so, yeah, it's exciting that we're talking about him. And I know the selectors will be. They have to, particularly if this sort of form, because it is sort of... It's just his strike rate is 222 at the moment. Goodness me, amazing!
Just run your mind, run your imagination for me, Crash. And I don't know the answer to this, so it's just really intuition and instinct. Could he be the next Dave Warner?
Yeah, he. Of course, he could. Remember when Warner came through? And everyone said, oh, look, he's a slogger, David Warner. And Greg Chappell said, no, he's more than that, and I'm going to tell him. And so they crafted Warner into a different sort of player. Jake has not got the defence that Warner had early. The one thing that Warner could do is he was a smart cricketer who could keep out decent balls. Now, Jake's averaging 18 in first-class cricket. They've found a way through him. They feel he's got fourth gear, but he hasn't got first and second at the moment. And maybe he has, but he just doesn't want to use them. But Warner would do that occasionally. Like he was... One thing I say about Warner, like Chris Rogers once said to me, he was the smartest guy he ever batted with. And he said if there was anything happening in the field, he'd say, have a look at Jimmy Anderson on the fence, mate. He's just hobbling a bit. We'll go two to him next time.
Yeah.
So he had great awareness. Jake hasn't got that at the moment, but he could be. He could be. And you know, some people will say that if you've got the fancy pyrotechnics, it's easier then to mould the rest of your game backwards down. You know, if he's got that, he can work on his defence, where if you're a defensive player, it's much harder to get the attacking shots.
He's the most intriguing figure in Australian cricket now and for the next little bit, and just the tasters that he's given. And, yeah, I'm so interested to see how the rest of his IPL pans out and how strong the case might be at the end of it. Robert Craddock for CD Motor Group. So one more for you, Crash, is the Meg Lanning interview with on the Howie Games. So it came on Thursday. Got a little bit interrupted when Taylor Swift dropped her album. But it's such an interesting listen. Is Meg, who's never opened up before in an intimate and safe environment, tells her story. To profound effect, I think. So you've written about the borderline eating disorder and that circumstance, and then her career in its totality, from playing in front of family and friends to playing in front of frenzied stadiums in India, for playing for a couple of hundred dollars here or there, to the WPL draft and a couple of hundred thousand dollars. It was the full gamut.
Yeah, beautiful interview by Howie. I thought it was probably his best, and he handled it with great sensitivity, and he wasn't quite sure what he was going to get when he went in, and that's great because Meg can be so guarded. I remember going to her press conferences in the last few years of her career, and she was almost detached. Like, she would stand there and nothing was too high or too low, and that's the way she had to be for a decade. People forget she was an Australian captain at 21. She was in the system for 3 years before that, and was captain for a decade. And I always remember that quote from Graham Smith, also a 21-year-old Test captain, the South African, who said, when you're a young captain, part of your childhood is snatched away from you. He said, you can never be that person on the bus making the smart aleck remark, the guy staying for the last beer, you know, the prankster. He said, you walk a very steady line. And she did that, but it ground her down, Jared. And it was a tricky one because she lost 7 kilograms by exercising almost with addiction and not eating enough. But it wasn't, and I remember seeing her in the last few years and thinking that Meg, yeah, she did look lightly framed, but that's not unusual. So it was a really difficult one to address. And Jared, may I say, I so sympathise with the Australian coach of the time and that, because you think something's wrong, but it's such a sensitive issue. And particularly, as Meg said, she was in denial when it was mentioned to her. She said, no, I'm all right, you know. So where do you take it in our sensitive world? How do you follow it up, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, yep. It's absolutely worth the couple of hours of your time to understand Meg Lanning's journey in its totality. It's there on the Howie Games. All right, Crash, will you have a look at Liv in Adelaide?
I'll keep an eye on it and for the madness, which it was last year. But don't underestimate what happened last year. That event in Australia, in Adelaide, LIV Golf, changed world golf forever because it prompted Jay Monaghan, the boss of the PGA Tour, when he saw the highlights of that on television, he thought, we've got to broker a peace deal with LIV. So it's incredible, isn't it? Little old Adelaide changing world golf as we know it, Jared.
Yes.
But when he saw that, he thought, we've got to jump in with them before it gets out of control. They still haven't worked out what they're doing, but little old LIV, Adelaide, God love them.
Enjoy your week, Crash.
Thanks, Jared. See ya.
Wisdom and experience of Robert Craddock. Not only Wayne Hawks, but John Hawks, Hall of Fame trainer, is going to join us next. The passing of Lonro. We're going to nod to one of the all-time greats before we set you up for Midday Madness. This is Waitley for Hyundai. Drive away in a Hyundai Staria load from $49,490.
There's the gap coming for Lonro. Sandaxon tries to pocket him. Beatman in a bit of trouble trying to force through. He got checked, the champ, and Sandaxon hit the front now from Mummify. Lonro, the champion's in desperate trouble. Del Zayo's gone past him. 150 to go. He's got to the outside. Del Zayo in front. The crowd roaring. Go, Lonro, go. But the three-year-old's in front. Del Zayo. Lonro, he's coming. He's going to get there. Yes, Lonro won it. What a champion. What a way to go. He beat Del Zayo. Elstrom is third.
An unforgettable day at Flemington, which came back to mind with the news that Lonro passed on Friday. One of the modern-day champions of the turf. 11 Group 1 wins in amongst his 26 career victories. The son of Octagonal, so one champ begot the next. The Black Flash, he was affectionately known as. Thought little family reunion at such a time. Wayne Hawks is in the studio. Hello to you, Wayne.
Morning, Jared.
And Hall of Fame trainer John Hawks is on the phone. John, it's great to have you on the program. Welcome.
Thanks, Jared.
Do these horses, do they live in your heart, John, all these years on?
Yeah, they still do. Just listen to that. I got goosebumps, you know, just listen to it. But those sort of horses there, nearly once in a lifetime. I've been lucky enough, you know, to have a couple like the Octagonal and then it followed into Lonro. And we've had a few others, but Lonro was always something special, you know, being the son of Octagonal, who he was one, you know, Octagonal. We bought him in New Zealand and went from the bottom to the top. And you know, and then, you know, then you produce a son of, you know, of a long row. So it doesn't really get much better than that, to be quite honest.
Wayne, would you get to see him from time to time in the stud setups?
Yeah, well, I had a heap of mates that went up late last year, and we saw him. He's retired. Well, he was retired at that stage, but we went and saw him, and the guys were just gobsmacked. And then they started getting out the old Twitter and looking up the races. But something very, very special was when Lonro's birthday was the 10th of December and he turned 21. Vin Cox was the boss of Godolphin and invited a couple hundred people up there, and Dad and I went up there. It was a, thanks to Vin, it was a black tie event. It was 47 degrees in the shade over summer, and we had it there at the homestead. And the best part was that Vin said, come on, you blokes, jump in the Range Rover. Dad, Darren Beeman and myself, we went down to the barn and stood there, and John and Darren played with Lonro like it was their firstborn. So to stand back and to see them doing that and talking to each other back and forth. Now, I don't think we videoed it, because I don't think they wanted it videoed, to be honest, but that was something special that I will take with me, because you've got the great trainer, the great jockey and the great horse, and, I mean, that is just a, you know, people would die to see that sort of stuff.
A black tie 21st for the Black Flash.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
John, what made him a great horse?
Oh, I think more his attitude than anything, Jared. Even from day one, he always had the, you know, the right sort of attitude. To, you know, you got to have the attitude. Ability is one thing, but you got to have the attitude to go with the ability. And he was always, you know, a horse that, you know, wanted to win, didn't matter, you know, what race he was in. You know, he always wanted to sort of get past the whole bloody field. And I think that was, you know, that was his biggest attribute. You know, as I said, you know, you've got to have the ability, but if you're not focused, you know, on being a racehorse, which unfortunately a lot of colts today aren't, you know, he used to enjoy himself. Even before a race, he would sort of skip and, you know, scream out a little bit, you know, and mount, you know, before we But as soon as you put the saddle on him, man, he switched in like switched into overdrive. You could just see it in him. He was focused from the moment the saddle went on until he went past the, you know, the winning post. But, you know, he's just a superstar. I mean, he done it both sides of the fence, which I think not a lot of, you know, not a lot of colts do, you know. They are a good racehorse or not a good so much they can produce, you know, being a stallion. But he done it both sides. And as I said, it would be great to have a horse like him today, believe you me. So, but no, you never forget that sort of moment. I mean, the Australian Cup, and he had a few other sensational ones. The Rider, you know, that was a special that particular day. I don't think there would have been a horse in the world would have beat him when he beat Grand Army by about five. At Rose Hill, and you know, he had some special wins, but I think the Australian Cup to come off the deck and still sort of get up and win, albeit I think Darren Beedman was a bigger part of it too. He knew the horse and he kept him balanced, even though he got decked, he sort of kept him balanced. And between them, you know, as I said, well, one was a superstar horse and was a superstar jockey, and they both got the job done.
We've got the George Ryder from 2004 for you, John.
Here comes Lonro. He's peeled him to the outside and he's about to swing him into action. Then came Private Steer. Grand Army took over. Not for long. Lonro's looming big time. Beedman with a look over the shoulder and Lonro goes to the front from Grand Army. Running on Private Steer. Sit down and kick him home. Lonro, what a great horse he is. He's careering away and he's going to win it brilliantly. Lonro two lengths to Grand Army.
What about the roar of the crowd there?
You could hardly even hear Terry Bailey calling then.
Yeah, although it was lucky enough, as I said, Octagonal was what they call the people's horse. Long Row was, Winks has been, Black Caviar. There's been a lot of you know horse, but there's not as many, you know, sort of draw the attention to the public, if you know what I mean. So and. Those type of horses, as I said, they don't come along every day, and then the record speaks for itself. So, but, you know, racing needs those type of horses, and, you know, as I said, you know, we've been lucky enough in the latter years, you know, Black Caviar and Winks. So, you know, but Long Row never ever, I think most people in racing would never ever forget Long Row. You know, some of the outside people mightn't know him as much, but in racing, as I said, he's a horse that'll never be forgotten.
So you and I, Wayne, we gravitate to this one, the Yulumba Stakes in 2002.
The great mare's going to corner with a good lead on Lonro. Sunline for home. Caulfield is erupting now. She's by three. Lonro's giving chase, but the great mare at the 200. Charles went for the whip. Lonro's got some work to do now. Under the whip, he stretches hard. It's Sunline by a length. Lonro trying to level up. A great battle. Sunline, Lonro. Lonro's getting to the great mare, and Lonro beats Sunline by a neck.
One of the great races, Wayne.
The thing that I remember so clearly, Peter Hegney is Peter Hegney's dad, Graham Hegney, trained one of the greatest horses ever in Tobin Bronze, and Peter Hegney was William Inglis' boss, and he walked up to me and said, "I've never backed a horse like Sunline," and all I cheered for was the other black horse to get past her. So that probably put it in perspective. People that backed Sunline were cheering for the finish because it was like a dead heat would have been the greatest thing for everyone besides us on the day. But to see two horses smashing each other silly, that both had the perfect run, and G. Childs and D. Beedman and Sunline and Lonro at their best, I reckon that was my greatest day with Lonro.
John, I know that in Adelaide on the weekend, they're naming one of their big races in your honour. So these horses play such a big role in that. So congratulations on that front. And thanks for sharing a few memories of Lonro with us this morning.
No, it's a pleasure, Jared. You know, pleasure to be on the show, as I said. And, you know, as I said, to all the people and that have backed him over a long period of time, I'm sure, you know, I'd be a little bit sad. But like everything, we got to move on. And thanks for having me on.
Good on you. John Hawkes, Hall of Fame trainer, who gave us Lonro. Wayne.
One thing about Lonro that is very clear in my mind was, and I'll use the word horny, because these are colts, right? And they go on to stud. And that's what Dad was just touching on before, that most colts get horny and they don't concentrate. There was a filly called Faith Hill. Ron Quinton trained her and she was grey. And she came down to Flemington. He picked her from 400 yards away, screamed like buggery at her the whole time. So I told Ron Quinton, and he said, well, this is the owner, and I didn't know him. So they sent Faith Hill, the mayor, to Lonroe when she first went to stud. Now, I've been thinking for the last 5 minutes, what was his name? The foal ended up being the first stakes winner for Lonroe in Queensland. Lonroe could be at the races having a yell and having a scream, but I've never, ever saddled a horse. And to be honest, I've saddled thousands of horses. As soon as you put that saddle on, it was game day. You could have brought Sunline past him and said, hey, sucker, have a look at her. Wasn't interested. As soon as game day came on, he put his game day hat on and away he went.
He's a great horse. Thanks for reminiscing with us, Wayne.
Thanks, Jared.
Nice to see you.